Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The United Nations marks World Ocean Day on June 8th every year to remind us of the important role that oceans play in our everyday life. The oceans are the lungs of our planet. It's a major food source, it's a major source of food and medicine, and it's a critical part of the biosphere. The theme for World Oceans Day 2022 is revitalization, collective action for the ocean, under which the United Nations is calling for urgent action as the health of the ocean is, quote, at a tipping point. Joining us on the show today is Dr. Archia Chung. She's the lead marine biologist at Reef Guardian, which is a non-profit appointed by the state government of Sabah to manage the Sugut Island Marine Conservation Area. Archia, thank you so much for joining us today. The Sugut Island Marine Islands Marine Conservation Area, it's just recently received or has been put on the IUCN, International Union for Conservation of Nature's Green List site. And it's the first of its kind in Malaysia. Let's begin there in our conversation today. Can you help us understand why this is so significant?
Thank you, Melissa. And this is significant because of this is the first for Malaysia. And then also this is the first for the Coral Triangle region. So we are the first in comparing to others, neighboring countries like Philippines, Indonesia, and Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands. So it's actually to the conservation areas have been well managed and well governed for the past 17 years, actually. So that's we are proud to having that certifications.
Yeah, actually, you know, this marine park, I believe, was set up in 2003, is it? As a marine wildlife conservation area. I'm curious to know about Sabah's commitment to its marine ecology, and how does it compare with other territories or states in the Federation? Is Sabah really leading in terms of its vision of its own environment and how to protect it?
How is that different from the others? Because this is the collaboration between the private and the governments, actually. So that's make it unique. So most of the parks are being governed or managed by the state government, for example. We have like several marine parks in Sabah. SIMCA, Sugut Island Marine Conservation, is one of the being a privately, or we call that a joint collaborate partnership with governments. So that makes it a difference.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about what goes into the conservation work for the for SIMCA? We understand it's a huge area, some 46,000 hectares, right? So, and it's three different islands. So what goes into that type of, privately managing? It's a non-profit, but it's privately managing this conservation area. Tell us a little bit about your work with Reef Guardians.
So, that's 46,000 hectares. We have three islands. So I'm currently in Bilians, which is the second islands. And there's also Langkayans and Tegaibil. So what in that Sugut Island Marine Conservation Area is that the habitats, marine habitats for nesting beaches, nesting beach for the nesting turtles. We have two species of sea turtles here, and then the the coral reef ecosystem. And then also the seagrass bed, that's a feeding ground for the sea turtles. So this is all these important habitats for this Sugut Island Marine Conservation Areas. And yeah, and then with the protection for the past, since 2001, actually, Shahad. So the conservation area is since 2001, and Reef Guardians is managing this area since 2004. So for the past 18 years, let's say 18 years of conservation works, and then I think the coral reef ecosystem, the coral reef habitats are getting better and better. And eventually, and I myself is a marine biologist, so we have been record a number of species of fish actually by photographing it. And then I have a record of over like 600 species of reef fish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that sounds extraordinary and also sounds like a lot of work. Could you help us understand what the challenges are? Because when we think of reefs and, you know, like the Great Barrier Reef in Australia gets a lot of headlines because of the coral bleaching, right? That correct me if I'm wrong, often attributed to rising temperatures within the waters, around the Great Barrier Reef. So are reefs in the tropics here in Sabah under the same sort of environmental pressures that, say, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia is?
Yes, we are actually. We've been facing that coral bleaching for the past few years, but it's not happened every year. For example, in Simca areas, we have records in 2014, 2016, 2017. So that's something that something is bad for the reef. And not only the climate change or the coral bleaching issue that we are facing with the pollutions too, like sedimentations and also input of nutrients actually that may be trigger the outbreak of crown-thorn starfish. This is one of the things that we're facing. And another thing, Sahad, is the illegal fishing that within the Sabah Sea is still a serious problem.
Right. I do want to come back and talk about illegal fishing because I think that's a serious issue that needs to be addressed. But if I may just stay on the coral reefs, I think it's quite interesting. You talked a little bit earlier about the coral triangle region, and I'd like to kind of get to understand that. But a more basic question is, for many of us, the idea of coral reefs, you know, is something that we often, you know, if we're not divers ourselves, coral reefs are just pretty pictures on screens often for many people living in urban centers. What is the importance of preserving coral reefs to the ecosystem?
The easier way to understand it is the coral reef is the house. It's like a habitat for many species. So when I'm talking to children, for example, I said, okay, if your house is being burned and all the fish have no place to stay, so that same thing happens to the reef. So if we do not protect the reef, mean to say we are losing the fishes. Some of the fishes are commercially important, which is important protein for peoples in our country that we rely on fishes for our cheap protein, actually. Yeah. But now because of the repeating of marine resources, we see the price of the fish is going up. Yeah.
Actually, it's very interesting. It was noted that, you know, even though much of the planet is covered by seas and oceans, we refer to the planet as Earth. It probably should be called seas or something, because much of planet Earth is actually seas. And there's maybe this land-based focus of, because human beings, you know, live on land, so we prioritize that. In our previous conversation with some marine biologists, they said we need to have a kind of think about the oceans. We live on land, but we need to think about the oceans. You talked about, nutrients flowing into oceans, causing, damage by actually giving too much food, as it were, to particular species that are detrimental to things. You know, like we have algae blooms, I think, around the world also capture headlines, and slime, and, you know, these are things. So how would you talk about killing the habitat and displacing fish. How is it that your marine park, I mean, what kind of direct impact are the inhabitants of Sabah making on the park? And also because of your location in the Sulu Sea, if I'm not mistaken, what about the Philippines and Indonesia and its contributions to the problems of the marine park?
Oh, well, here in Simca, we don't have no threat from the Indonesian side, but we do have some threats from the Philippine side, for example. Yeah, like, but it's mostly the threats are from the illegal fishing. So, yeah.
If I can follow up on that, because believe it or not, one of my first pieces I wrote as a journalist in Malaysia in the mid-90s was on fish bombing in Sabah. And is fish bombing still a major problem there in Sabah?
Yes, it certainly is still rampant, actually, that happens around the Sea of Sabah. So just to telling you about the blast fishing things that we collaborate with the Reef Defenders, NGO actually that are based in Hong Kong, that design blast detectors to put in the sea to detect the number of blasts around the areas. So for SIMCA ourselves, we have 5 actually that deploys in 2014 to record the number of blasts that happens within this area.
Okay, can you, sorry to interrupt, can I get you to explain perhaps for those who may not understand fish bombing, what exactly it happens and what is it used for? Who is guilty of this?
Okay, a blast fishing is actually a very cheap method to getting a large amount of fish. So the method is using a bottle of beer, for example, a glass bottles, and then a mixture of fertilizers and gasoline, and then you need a detonators, and after that, so we're using a weight, for example, a metal rod, so then when they light up the detonators and throw it to the sea. So the blast fishing is target on the school fish. So when it happens, we drop to the reef, for example, it destroyed coral reef, and then it destroyed population of fish populations up to about maybe one drop at it up to 7 meters radius for coral reef, and for fish it's up to 30 meters actually. So all the fish are just stunned and die and dead and sink to the reef. So what happened is that all these fishermen would go dive down mostly with the compressor fishing hose and got a dive down to the reef and to collect the fish. So yeah, that's the methods.
Well, okay, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and talk a little bit more about marine crime and perhaps the challenges it presents to marine conservation. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back and continue this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This. Thanks so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. To mark World Oceans Day on June 8th, we're chatting to Dr. R.J. Chung, lead marine biologist at Reef Guardian, which is the non-profit appointed by the state government of Sabah to manage the Sugut Islands Marine Conservation Area. Dr. Aceh, can we talk a little bit about marine crime? So you talked about blast fishing, which presents an enormous damage to the coral reefs in the area. How successful have you been in working with stakeholders to combat marine crime like blast fishing?
It considering quite we are quite successful in the collaborative enforcement. Well, we call that a strategy. Then we actually have that 2017. We set up the steering committees that consists of the multiple agencies like ESCOM, Marine Team, the Marine Team, and Marine Police, and Navy, and even the fishery departments actually to sit together to talk about this illegal marine crime issue within these conservation areas and even outside of these Sabah waters.
Well, what about the community? Because I can't imagine that the people who are committing this crime are very rich. I'm assuming they are just ordinary fishermen who have found a very a technique that's easy for them, right? So for very little effort, you can get a lot of fish. Is engagement with the community important, educating them about the impact that this technique has on the on their very livelihoods in the future? You can end up overfishing, couldn't you? So if, what level of engagement with the community is there?
We do have the engagement with the local community, actually. The local communities here, the one that crossed by to Langkayang Island is only like 25 kilometers. This is through Sansugut. And then we work closely with the peoples there, actually. The peoples in the Sansugut, they do not do illegal fishing. So what they use is a traditional fishing. And then the way of actually this illegal fishing are damaging marine resources. So the collaborations that we have with them is that before that, I mean, it started in 2012 when we have this outreach program with the peoples. And then also this year, even we have this project with the under the fund of WWF Malaysia, that we have this citizen science program that we're going to teach them to do to be a citizen scientist, to records of fish and marine resources in the mangrove areas. And then one of the collaborations that we have also is the communications thing. And they are actually reporting to us about the illegal fishing within, even in the kampong areas. They were telling us about, oh, somebody is doing sodium cyanide fishing, or somebody is selling turtles eggs in close by. So as a reef guardians, and then when we receive a message like that, we'll pass the message to the enforcement agency, actually.
That's really wonderful to hear of the collaboration with the communities. What about tourists? When people come into, I'm sure now that, you know, tourism might be picking up. Is there an impact of perhaps, you know, footfall of tourists might leave some ecological impact in the area?
The entire Simca, because of there's a rules and regulations that we have, actually we limit the number of visitors to Langkayang. It's only to maximum up to 60, and all visitors that come to the islands, they are briefed on the rules and regulations on the islands. So for example, the do and don'ts. So for example, don't step on the corals, and then during snorkeling, and even don't pick up a shell on the beach and all that, and don't feed the fish, all that, yes. And then because we are reef guardians, about 50% of us are being trained as a wildlife, honorary wildlife warden, so I mean to say we have power to stop them. So we tell them earlier that, okay, if you do, you against the rules and regulations, we will able to stop your activities. So we can take you out from the waters, and no more diving for you, or no more snorkeling for you. So that's what we do.
Yeah, actually, could you actually? Because I love beachcombing. I love walking on the beach and picking things up. What is the problem with picking up shells? Because I know there must be an ecological reason for it. Could you help us understand what we do when we take things away?
Well, Shahad, that's a shell, a part of the beach things, and then it's a sand thing. You imagine that if I have a lot of tourists come over to the beach and picking up everything. So what else I can show it to you? There's no more shell on the beach, right?
Yeah.
Is that awareness spread? Because I think, you know, when I think about the theme of World Oceans Day, about collective action for the ocean, it's not just marine biologists like yourself, Dr. Achir, but it's everyone. Everyone has a role to play, and it comes down to that education and awareness, not to to leave a negative impact on the environment. How would you, I guess, you know, translate that for, say, civil society, people who go out and may not live in ocean areas, but has contact with the ocean and may not realize the impact that they leave behind? What message would you, how would you translate that agenda or the theme of a collective action for the ocean?
Oh, well, okay. To the public, actually, that's we have to do it to the awareness program that we we have sometimes to the school and publics and roadshow, for example, and on that how, for example, some marine pollutions, a plastic issue can be causing a problem to the oceans.
Yeah. Do you see a lot? Yeah, you're absolutely. I mean, plastic is a huge thing because we use a lot of plastics. We don't see where it goes. Are you seeing serious plastic pollution in the area that you manage?
Yes, not so bad here, but it's still a problem. But I think if you visit to Sampona site, if you've been to Sampona, yeah, Lahadatu, if you in the jetty, and then you can see all the plastic issue. So that's a very bad problem, actually. Yeah.
I'm very heartened to hear, Dr. Achia, that you've seen a progress in the time that you've been there, 17 years, I think you said. You've seen an improvement in the health of the ocean. Do you look at other countries and see that, you know, things that you can learn and you'd like to adopt here in Malaysia to perhaps improve that progress, to speed up that progress? Again, sometimes we think about the state of the environment and it feels almost irreversible, the damage. Have you seen damage been reversed, and what elsewhere that can be replicated in Malaysia?
Well, I need to reflect that actually. So the conditions of the sea actually is, how to say that? Yes, it's getting bad and bad. And the work that we do now is actually to slow down the process. Yeah. So what I mean is that if you're comparing to the coral covers in the past 10 years ago, 17 years ago, in the past, I still recording maybe 60% of the average, but now we probably reduced to 50%, which is going down. But this is in protected areas. But how about, can you imagine that when the area is not being protected, it's getting going down and badly? So what I would say that for us, for Reef Guardian, we're just maintaining it, maintaining the condition of the coral reef here. And then by reducing impact, further impacts, by what we are saying just now, to reduce that illegal fishing coming in and illegal taggings and all that. And then your questions about the example from the other countries, I would say, yes, in the Australia, for example, most of the areas are well managed. That's what we try to achieve. So now with the green listing, actually, when we adopt to the, when we apply for the green list, we actually look at ourselves that which area that we need to improve. And during the process that we know that, okay, we need to do more. And collaborative management, for example, to have these, get involved with more stakeholders on the management of this site.
Well, yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Achia, for speaking with us today. We appreciate your time. That was our conversation with Dr. Achia Chung, lead marine biologist at Reef Guardian. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Shiraj Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.